that what I said last time was only an introduction. Because the subject is very vast. Maybe that I may need you one day, not now, to give 20 talks on this subject. One day. After some time. But I thought I'll give at least one more talk so that you enter into the subject more properly. So let us revise first what we said last time. Basically, I told you about the meaning of dharma, which is that which holds, that which makes for stability. Secondly, I told you how people have aspired for stability. That is what relevance of dharma. Why people look for stability? How and why? Then I gave the example of Buddha. He had lived a life of luxury for many, many years, 3 decades nearly. And then suddenly he sees 4 sights. The sight of a sick man, of the old man, of the dead man, and of a hermit. 4 sights. And all these sights gave him the experience of impermanence. The healthy man becomes sick, young man becomes old, living man becomes dead, and a man who is attached to the world suddenly turns into hermitage, to become a hermit, to move, wander about in search. As a result, there was a real, in the heart of Buddha, the real pursuit of permanence. And permanence is that which stabilizes. It is the pursuit of dharma. Then I spoke of Descartes. And we said that he was gripped with doubt. And doubt always makes you unstable. And there is a tremendous urge in human being to overcome this instability. And therefore there is search for certainty. Certainty is that is a resting place. Your mind, your thought rests in certainty. The third thing I spoke to you about was immortality. And I said that the Vedic search, if you read the Vedas, you'll find there is a constant search for immortality. The experience of mortality is an experience of instability. It gives you a feeling that something is missing. Suddenly something is nipped, arrested. And you feel uncomfortable about it. I gave you the examples of Ruru and Priyamvada, love and death, the story of Savitri. The death occurs and then there is a tremendous movement towards the immortality. And I said how Sri Aurobindo has given to this story of Savitri a tremendous dimension. The whole of Savitri is a cry of immortality. So I spoke of dharma, pursuit of dharma as pursuit of immortality, pursuit of certainty and pursuit of permanence. In a sense, all the three are interchangeable. Then I told you the difference between animals and men. And I said that the main difference is that whereas animals have no pursuit. They may have many other pursuits, but they have no pursuit for dharma. They don't look for these three things. Human beings have this pursuit. So one distinguishing feature of human being from all other animals and creatures is the pursuit of dharma. And third thing I told you was that this pursuit of dharma begins with the distinction between two words, is and ought. Every human being at a certain stage feels the stirring of ought, transcends what is presented, and feels that there is something else which is not here, but which should be brought out, should be brought down, should be manifested. I gave you the example of a short story of a small girl who was rescued and a fat lady who comes to visit that house and criticizes the small girl, and the small girl says, how would you feel if I had to tell you what you have told about me? This is the starting point of ought, meaning you ought not to do this. The starting point of dharma is this basic point. You know, Jesus Christ has given a very short formula. Do unto others what you want others to do unto you. Do unto others, do to others what you want others to do for you. It's a very simple but very powerful statement, and that is the starting point of ought. Normally human beings want best things for themselves from others, but not necessarily from ourselves to the others. But when you begin to experience that we should do unto others what you want others to do unto yourselves, this will be the sign that now you have started the movement towards dharma, automatically. This is a starting point. There is something which you want to happen, which is not happening. And then thirdly, I told you the concept of Rita. There was a discovery in the most ancient times, that if you make a progression from what you are to what ought to be, it's a long process of progression. As you move forward, what you ought to find out now, and when it is realized, you again find, oh, this is not enough. There is still a further ought. And when that is realized, you find there is still a further ought. And when you go there, you find there is still a further ought. And if you go on and you reach up to the climax of course is certainty, immortality, permanence. That is the climax. As you move forward, there is, as it were, a kind of a guiding line, some string that all the time pulls you upwards. That string which pulls you upwards and upwards and upwards is discovered by the Vedic rishis, and they gave it the name Rita. All those who have studied the Veda, they find this concept, this idea of Rita, to be one of the most important discoveries. They find that Rita is not only something that is at the highest, but is also something that has a dynamic capacity to pull you upwards. It's like a pulley. Takes you upwards all the time. In other words, dharma is not static. It is dynamic in character. Rita is dynamic. It constantly pulls you upwards. Now, this Rita was expressed in the Vedic times through three words. Satyam, Ritam, Brihat. All the three are Sanskrit words. One day I'm sure you'll learn Sanskrit. It will be easier for you to understand. But Satyam is the expression of reality. Sat is reality. Satya is the expression, exact expression of reality. You must have seen that one of the most difficult things for any student is to express accurately. Many of you are artists and you want to draw a picture. And one of the most difficult things is that what you feel inwardly most accurately and you want to bring out in the picture, in the image, most accurately, it's very difficult. Now, this exercise, if you do in life, whatever you feel to be true, to be real, you try to express accurately. That is satya. But what you feel to be real today is your present experience of real today. Tomorrow, as you expand, you have another view of true, of the real. There is an image given in the Veda that if you climb a hill, at a certain stage of climbing, you have one view. And if you climb further, you have still a further view. Same thing, because the background remains the same, and yet the vision changes. And then when you reach to the peak, you have an overall view, everything as if it changes, all remains the same, and yet all changes. And then the Veda says, there is no end of peaks. There are peaks and peaks and peaks and peaks of reality. Reality is such a vast. Therefore, satya is connected with brihat. Brihat means vast. So the Veda said that whenever you speak of the truth, be sure that you are vast at the same time. Because if you are not vast and yet you speak of the truth, it may be narrow truth. It is simply your present perception. You are really able to express the reality only when you are vast. In fact, Sri Aurobindo has given the word all comprehensiveness. That is the word Sri Aurobindo uses for vast. When you are vast, everything is comprehended. And when you have expressed reality, and when that reality is seen in an all-comprehensive way, then there is Rita. Satyam, Ritam, Brihat. Three words. Expression of reality accurately. Expression of reality in all its comprehensiveness. When that happens, then whatever is done in action is right. You must have very often found that we have constantly a question, is it a right action or a wrong action? How many people are quarreling on this question? Is it right or wrong? And the Veda's answer is that you are both right and wrong until you reach a point where you have seen the reality in all its comprehensiveness, and in that perception of comprehensive reality, the action proceeds. When action proceeds without this comprehensive reality, it is not necessarily the right action. So, right action is Rita. Only he can perform the right action who has gone to the reality and to the comprehensive reality and attained to the vision of the comprehensive reality, and from there proceeds an action like an arrow. The image that is given in the Veda is like the rays of the sun. You know, the rays of the sun are straight rays. Absolutely. You know, the word right comes from rect, that which is straight. The right action is always a straight action. There is no crookedness. All human beings, somehow, they try to manipulate to arrive at their ends, little ends. Because we are so ignorant, we want to achieve this thing, that thing. We see whatever we see, we want to possess. Why? We don't know why. We are so small in our normal condition. We are like small children. You see a toy, we want to have a toy with you. So you see some kind of other thing, we want to put in your mouth. We are like small children. As you rise into adulthood, as you rise bigger and bigger, you find that all these movements are crooked actions. You are obliged to take some kind of winding paths to achieve what you want. The right action is a straight action. There is no debate about it. It is straight, coming right from the venue of the vision of the truth, and everything is straight. Action follows. Sri Aurobindo gives the example of the bow. Bow and the arrow. He says that you should become like a bow. Perfect bow. When that happens, then automatically there is an archer, which is not you. This is the one secret that is given in the Bhagavad Gita. When you read the Bhagavad Gita, one day you should read it. This is the basic teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. That really speaking, as long as you think that you are doing, you are not doing. When you know that you are not doing, then you will cease to be you and you will be really something other than you. And the one who is the real doer, he will be seen by you to be doing straight whatever is to be done. There is a secret to be discovered that there is an art. We are only a bow. So Sri Aurobindo says, you only become a bow. That is what you are. Become a bow. When you really become a bow, you will discover there is an archer. That archer is the sunlight itself. It is supreme light. The truth light. The truth consciousness. Vast. Comprehensive. And you will find that he is the real archer. And the moment you become the bow, the arrow will fly through your bow straight towards this target. That is the right action. When we reach that point, when the archer himself takes possession of you and shoots exactly at the target, straight, that is the right action. That is Rita. So Rita is an action proceeding from the archer, who is Satya and Brihat, who is both the vision of reality and the comprehensive vision of reality, and an action proceeds from this archer, which is straight, and when you simply become a perfect bow, and the action proceeds, that is the right action. So until you reach it, do not debate whether you are right or wrong. You take it for granted you are both right and wrong until we reach that point. So why should we spend time unnecessarily? Most of the people go on debating, saying, I am right, he is right, that is right. This is the Vedic truth. It has discovered that when you reach the highest, the right action will automatically, there will be no debate about it. It's a straight action starting from the sun rays. And it won't be only one action. The sun never casts only one ray. There are multiple rays at the same time. The right actions are simultaneously varied, many. In our narrow things, we always say the right action must be only one action. The Supreme, when you go to the Supreme, there are thousand things which are right at the same time. All of them harmonious. So now we get a more perfect idea of dharma. Dharma is the right action, rita, which proceeds from the perception of reality and from the perception of the comprehensive reality, and which proceeds automatically straight in multiple forms through us as a bow by an archer who himself has the possession of that perception of reality, comprehensive reality. Right? This is rita, this is dharma. So you have now a long journey spread out before you. Where you are, you grow gradually. Now what do you do in the process? Constantly try to be accurate in your expression. If you are a writer, write accurately. If you are a poet, describe truthfully, accurately, symbolically, and beautifully. If you are a musician, then allow the melody to flow accurately so as to describe the reality, as it were to give the tonal reality to the reality, the tones that are reality as tones. Discover those true tones and manifest them. Whatever you are a worker, a shoemaker. Get the right form of the shoe, the true form of the shoe. Be absolutely skillful so that the right thing is manifested and the ultimate manifestation is perfect. Whatever you do, this is the process. Now, this process has been described by many people in many different ways. That is why when you take books on dharma, some will say, oh, dharma is this. Some will say, dharma is that. Others say, dharma is that, and creates a lot of confusion. All confusions can be set aside and can be reconciled if you know that all of them, if they fit into this description which I have given you of the rita, then they are correct. If they are not, throw them away, because there are many wrong ideas of dharma also. I have brought with me three sentences which describe dharma. These are some of the best expressions in the Indian tradition. In the Western tradition also there are many concepts of which also I shall tell you. I am telling you now this because you will come across these ideas and you should be acquainted with them. Very rarely you will come to the description of dharma which I have given you, because it is only in the writings of Veda, Upanishad or Sri Aurobindo that the ultimate things have been expressed. many of the writers have confined themselves to middle heights. They have not scaled to the topmost. So that is why I wanted to tell you first the topmost, so that once you know that, then all confusions at the lower levels can be understood properly and dissipated. But I am giving you these three descriptions of dharma, which are given in the Indian tradition. These three descriptions, one is given in a book called Manusmriti. Now, you may not have heard the word Manusmriti at all. In India, there was at one time a very great sage, and he was called Manu. And he found that many people are struggling to find out what is dharma. And they were not able to read the talk. He himself had read the talk, but he wanted to help people who were still struggling to rise from below. So in the middle part, he wanted to help them and give some simpler definitions, simpler ideas. So he has given 10 words. I give you only 3 words. Immortality, certainty, and permanence. Now Manu has given 10 words. Now these 10 words describe 10 states of consciousness. When you rise from lower to the higher, you will find that there is one development which only develops states of consciousness. There is a difference between states of consciousness and what you call accumulation of knowledge. In the books, when you read books, you will have plethora of information, knowledge about so many things. What is oxygen? What is hydrogen? What is cell of the body? What is an animal? So many things, you know, many subjects. In each subject, you will have a lot of information. The more information you have, you feel you have more knowledge. But this is distinguishable from states of consciousness. Very often we do not make a distinction between the two, but if you are very, very careful, you will find that there is a marked distinction between possessing knowledge and possessing the state of consciousness. Now, these 10 words describe the states of consciousness. I shall tell you, what are the states of consciousness? First one is called dhriti. It is Sanskrit. Excuse me if I take Sanskrit words, because it will also introduce you to Sanskrit to some extent, which I want you to be introduced. Dhriti. Dhriti means capacity, a state of consciousness, out of which patience is born. Now you'll see patience is not a state of knowledge. It's a state of consciousness, to be patient. If somebody says, try to be patient, it's not a question of learning this subject or that subject. Learning to be patient has a different kind of a school. It's not that by learning chemistry or by learning mathematics you'll be patient. To be patient is another line of development. If your consciousness is able to move slowly but steadily, that gives you the capacity of patience. So that is the first mark. If you are patient, Manu says, you have already entered into dharma. That is the first mark. Second, kshama, forgiveness. You know, there are many people who want to take revenge. Somebody hits you and you want to hit back. Somebody has insulted you, you want to insult back. Somebody has given you trouble, you want to give him trouble back. Kshama, forgiveness, is quite different. You try to be forgiveful. It's a different school. It is not by getting more knowledge that you get more and more forgiveness. You have to run on a different line of development. It is to develop your consciousness. As Buddha says, and this is a wonderful statement for anybody who wants to learn forgiveness, revenge is never quieted by revenge. Never. You take it for granted. This is a statement he has made. Revenge is never quieted by revenge. So if you want to stop revenge somewhere, you have to do something else. What is that? Forgiveness. You are hurt. That is why revenge, sense of revenge comes in you. You are hurt. Now you go above being hurt. There are many conditions under which you can overcome hurt. When you have tremendous love for the person who has hurt you, you have normally a condition of forgiveness. So increase of love for the object who has given you trouble, it gives you tremendous forgiveness. As Sri Aurobindo says, who is my enemy? That is his great statement. Who is my enemy? One who took me to the embrace of my most beloved. He says that one who is your, whom you think is enemy, remember that really speaking, he is the one who takes you straight to your beloved. Now, one who takes you to your beloved, can you ever think that he is your enemy? This is the state of consciousness which Buddha wants to give. He says that when you feel revenge, remember that revenge can never be quieted by revenge. In revenge, you always have the sense of somebody who is your enemy. Then remember Sri Aurobindo who says, who is your enemy? The enemy is the one who takes you straight to the embrace of the beloved. And if that is so, where is the place for revenge? There is automatic forgiveness. Even forgiveness does not exist. We are even beyond it. There is only love and love and love. That is the condition. Then the third is dhamma. Dhamma is self-control. Purity. Dhamma is purity. Now it is very difficult to define purity. But simple definition of purity is absence of mixtures. There are many states of consciousness in which you will find too many mixtures. Your mind is clouded by desire. That is a mixture. The thought is clouded by desire. That is a mixture. Thought and desire, the two are mixed together. If the two are separated from each other, thought becomes clear. If desire is freed, you will see desire clearly that, oh, this is desire. Otherwise, you will give a lot of coating to the desires. When a child says, oh, I like to see television. Why? I get a lot of information out of it. I get a lot of knowledge out of it. He does not confess to you that he gets a lot of excitement also out of it. And that he sees television not because he gets a lot of information primarily, but because there is a lot of excitement in it. Getting information is a part of thought. Getting excitement is a part of desire. And the two are mixed together, so there's a mixture. So if your mind becomes pure, it is free from mixtures. So that is another condition of your dharma. Asteyam means non-stealing. Human beings are constantly in search of things. And whenever they find something, they want to put into their pocket. That is called steyam. That is called the state of theft. These things in the world, they don't belong to us. Nothing belongs to us in the world. This whole vast world, these pebbles are here. Whether I exist or not, they will be there. They don't belong to me. But when I see and like them, I put them into my pocket and they say, they are mine. And then I quarrel with others. They are mine, you cannot take them. This is adharma. Dharma is, everything belongs to the whole world. And even if I take it, it is not mine. I take it for a small use if I want, but nothing more than that. In fact, Sri Krishna says, whoever takes without offering is a thief. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is a very great definition as given of theft. Whoever takes without offering is a thief. So now you understand the meaning of theft. As long as you take but do not give back anything, do not offer, you realize that you are in a state of adharma. The state of dharma is that when you take and you offer, you should be in the state of offering. And then Sri Krishna says even further, after offering something is left, that is all that you should use. Go on offering what is just left. Uchishtam, that which is left, is to be used by you. But even while using, you again offer. In other words, life should be a constant offering. That's why in Auroville Charter, you know, Mother has given, you should be willing servitors of divine consciousness. Willingly, servitor means offering. Servant, to be a servant means you offer yourself. A servant is always in a state of offering. So if you are a constant servitor of divine consciousness, you can never be a thief. You have achieved asteyam. You are already in a state of non-stealing. In fact, your mother wants that all of it constantly be in a state of non-stealing. And that is dharma. Then, shaucham. Shaucham is what? Cleanliness. There should be physical cleanliness. There should be vital cleanliness, mental cleanliness, psychic cleanliness, spiritual cleanliness. In all manners, we should be clean, transparent. So this is, when you are not transparent, it is adharma. When you become transparent, that is dharma. Indriya nigraha. This is one of the most important things to be remembered. Control of senses. There is a great Upanishad called Kathopanishad. One day I would like you to learn Upanishads. I am giving a long program of studies. Learning of Sanskrit, learning of Bhagavad Gita, learning of the Veda, learning of Kathopanishad. But this is a lifelong program. Not that necessarily within 20 years you should do. It doesn't matter. It's a lifelong program. So we shall learn many, many things. But one day you will learn Kathopanishad, in which it is said that our body is so constituted that all our senses means eyes, ears, nose, mouth, tongue, everything, our skin, naturally opens outward. Your eyes are closed. The moment you open, you see the outer world. your ears hear something that is coming from outside. Your tongue tastes only when something from outside comes and you have taste. Every sense that you have opens outwards. And most of the difficulties of the world arise because once you open outward, you run outwards. They are like horses. Our senses are like horses. And horses want to run. Similarly, our senses, the moment they are open outside, they simply want to run. You eat ice cream, one cup, and you want to eat another cup of ice cream. The senses immediately demand more and more and more. They are like wild horses. But reality of which he spoke, satyam, the reality, is inward, is not outward. Outward is only an external expression of the internal. So if you want to see internal, how will you see internal? So the answer that is given is indriya nigraha. Your senses should be controlled. They are like horses. Not that you should stop them running. Allow them to run, but under control. You should be able to say no whenever you want. One ice cream cup is all right. But you should be able to say now no more. That is called nigraha. That is this control of senses. You should not be slave of senses. You should be the master of the senses. So, the moment you are able to control the senses, you understand that you are moving towards dharma. Dihi. Dihi is clarity of intelligence. Intelligence is of many kinds. There is intelligence of the elephant, there is intelligence of the horse, there is intelligence of the cow, there is intelligence of the dog, there is intelligence of the cat. There are many kinds of intelligence. And remember, all these intelligences are human beings. We have all kinds of intelligences. If you examine your intelligence, you will find horse intelligence, elephant intelligence, cow intelligence, dog intelligence, cat intelligence. Our intelligence is a very composite kind of intelligence. It has many, many kinds of intelligences. These intelligences are all partial intelligence. They are mixed intelligences. Whereas the is pure intelligence. Pure intelligence is like a polished mirror. Whatever is real, both inner and outer, if your intelligence is fully polished, you will see, if you clearly, there will be no deflection, no shame. There will be so much of anxiety, so much of worry, when you are not prepared. At the last moment, you want to take hold of the book. You want to read 3-4 lines, suddenly, wherever your eyes fall, perchance you will be asked some such question for which an answer is lying there. It is a wavering mind, wavering state of thought. You are not sure, full of worry, full of anxiety. But when you know a thing very well, then you are sure, whatever question is asked, I am ready. And actually like to be asked any question from any corner. It's a new state of thought. So when the knowledge is attained, then there is a fullness of consciousness. In the one of the Upanishads, it is said, Chidghana. When you have full knowledge, then your consciousness becomes solid. When your knowledge is not perfect, it is fluid. But when your knowledge is perfect, it becomes absolutely solid. It is ghana. You can experience also. In fact, Sri Aurobindo says, when you experience peace, if it is true peace, you will feel as if a pillar, a strong pillar is thrust into your mind. peace will come as a strong pillar, stable pillar, in which thought cannot take place at all. It is complete peace, absolutely peace. That is the state of knowledge. Knowledge always gives you peace. This is the mark of knowledge. If you are looking for peace, then have true knowledge. It gives you peace. Satyam. Satyam is expression of reality, accurate expression of reality, which I have told you already. So there is also mark of dharma. Akrodha, absence of anger. Just as I spoke of kshama, the forgiveness. Forgiveness and absence of anger are correlated. When there is no anger, forgiveness becomes easy. So you should be free from anger. The more you are free from anger, the greater you are in the dharma. These are the 10 dashakam dharma lakshanam. These 10 are the characteristics of dharma. This is Manusmriti says. And Manusmriti gives you kind of a summary of hundreds of books on dharma. He says, without reading hundreds of books, I tell you very simply, sum and substance of dharma is only these 3, 10 characteristics. Now in Mahabharata, I told you I'll give 3 sentences. One was this one. Later on I'll give to Ritsi, if you'll settle sir and give you these papers so that in brief you will remember for your whole life that these 10 characteristics give you dharma. Now there is another one which is taken from Mahabharata. It speaks of a smaller number. So even a smaller definition of dharma is given. They repeat many of the things which are already told here. Ahimsa, non-violence. Satyam, truth. Akrodha, absence of anger. Andru Shamsyam, absence of cruelty. Dama, self-restraint. And Arjavam, straightforwardness. Now you will find that these 5 words are in a sense containing those 10 words. So if you remember those 10 words, you don't need to remember these 5 words. This is only smaller definition. In fact, these 5 words are much suppler. So non-violence, truth, absence of anger, absence of cruelty, self-restraint, and straightforwardness. Now the 3rd one is also taken from Mahabharata. You know, Mahabharata is the greatest epic in the world history. It is said that what is not in Mahabharata is not anywhere else. This is the claim. It is not, it's an exaggerated claim, but it gives you the extent of the dignity of Mahabharata. It is said what is not in Mahabharata is not anywhere else. And all that is already in Mahabharata. So Mahabharata is supposed to give you answers to all kinds of questions. And dharma is one of the most important questions. Therefore, there was a dialogue between the king and the teacher. And then the teacher tells him that the following are the words which give you dharma. Kindness, benevolence, non-violence, in action, words and thought. This is dharma. Now this is a still shorter definition of dharma. I'll give you all the 3. You keep them with you because they will help you in deciding whenever you do any action, whether it is dharma or adharma, even before you read Rita, the highest, it will give you a guidance. But keep them only as guide, not as something binding. Dharma is a progressive development. Therefore, if anybody says, this is Dharma in the final word, until you read Rita, don't take it to be final. Because it is constantly developed. Now I shall come to the final part of my talk. Should I stop here? If you are tired, I can stop here. I continue? Yes? It's not long, but I am coming to the final term because it is perhaps the most important thing in our life. Dharma is very often written in another word, Swadharma. There is Dharma, but there is also Swadharma. Dharma is something universal. All these that I have told you are universal. But apart from that, there is a special Dharma of each one. There is Dharma which is valid or true for everybody. But India has said that apart from this, there is something special for everyone. I may be equipped with a certain quality. You may be equipped with another quality. Therefore, my dharma, what is right for me, will be quite different from what is right for you. Don't judge in dharma all as if uniform. That is a wrong judgment. You ask a child to make a speech. Now, he will make his speech at his best. His pronunciation may be not absolutely correct. His tonality will not be continuous and uniform. He will not be so fluent. He may not be so very articulate, and yet you will say beautiful. When he finishes his speech, you'll say wonderful, correct, right. You don't expect from the child the kind of speech that you will expect from an orator. If the orator speaks like the child, you'll say failed. He is not a good orator. So you should not judge the child with the measurement of a big one. You should not measure the big one with the measurement of a small one. That is why India says that when you speak of dharma, if you have good patience at a very high level, it is good. Children are normally impatient, but even if you show some patience, bravo, it's very good. Even some patience in child is a great quality. But if an adult one shows only small patience, that is no good. The big one should show tremendous patience, in fact, infinite patience. As Sri Aurobindo says, God has infinite patience towards us. If he had not infinite patience for us, he would be punishing everybody, because everybody, how imperfect we are. But he is very patient. He allows each one to develop in his own way, in his own rhythm, extremely patient. So, first point about Swadharma is that you take each individual, take his quality, his condition, his station, his age, his abilities, his potentialities, and then see how much he is expressing. All those dharma conditions which are shown, and then judge whether it is right for him or not right for him. What is good for one is not good for another. There is a proverb, isn't it? What is food for one is poison for another. It could be. So you should be quite careful. Do not apply the same yardstick for everybody. So while speaking of dharma, you should not be rigid. There are many people who are very rigid about dharma. You know, there are many pandits who take good bath in the morning in the Ganges. And even if they meet somebody who has not taken bath and his shadow falls upon him, he feels that he is polluted. Because he feels I have become impure only by the shadow of somebody who has not taken a bath. Now, this is a rigid application of dharma. Cleanliness is good, quite all right. But don't be rigid. That man who has not taken bath, you have taken bath. There is already a distinction between the two. What is dharma for you is not dharma for him. Apply the condition of cleanliness to one who has taken bath. But one who has not taken bath, don't apply to him the same condition. Be very careful, be very tender, be very discriminative. Now this is a small explanation of Swadharma. Sri Krishna says in one of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita that you should always find out your Swadharma. Every individual has not only to find out what is dharma, but he should also find out his Swadharma. And each one should be careful not to imitate other ones. Another may have his own dharma. So he says, you discover your dharma and be true to your dharma and do not imitate the dharma of another. Very often human mind compares and judges and puts people together and competes. In the case of dharma, no competition. Everyone should find out his dharma. Not be required to follow the dharma of somebody else. Let everyone follow on his own line. Many parents, for example, who have many five, six children. We have five brothers. And my mother always used to make a mistake. What my eldest brother wanted to do, I should also be wanting to do. Without realizing that I am a fourth one, and my eldest is the eldest one. It's a mistake. He may succeed in something, I may fail in it. And I will be punished because my elder brother has passed and I have not passed. So punishment for the younger one. This is wrong. Many teachers also make the same mistake. That is why some good teachers like Nitti always say that we should allow each one to move on his own line of development, which is very correct. Everyone should be allowed to move at his own rhythm. Some may be fast, some may be slow. One who is fast, allow him to move fast. One who is slow, allow him to go slow. Don't impose one law upon the other. Not one dharma on the other dharma. Be very patient. Now comes the deepest concept of Swadharma. And that is connected with Swabhava. This is the last point I wanted to make. Nothing more. Swadharma is dharma which flows from oneself. What is oneself is one's becoming. You are constantly becoming, growing, isn't it? Everyone is growing. Now, what is growing? What is the source of growing? We are all growing because there is some source in us, which is in us. There is like a reservoir of water, which is there in us. In each one of us, there is this reservoir. Without the reservoir, we would never be able to grow. So remember that each one of us has a reservoir. That reservoir is your real yourself, your true being. Not your outer being. Outer being is not your reservoir. There is an inner being or inmost being, which is your reservoir. Now that reservoir has a very special way of flow. It flows, but it has its own special way of flowing. Its own rhythm of flowing. You will mark it. Every individual you will see has a reservoir, and out of that something is flowing. And if you observe very correctly, you will find that this flow has its own rhythm. To discover the real rhythm of everyone requires your knowledge of the becoming of itself. That is called swabhava. Swabhava has two words, swa and bhava. Bhava is becoming. Swa is self. Self which is becoming, self which is shaping. This shaping has a rhythm and the law of rhythm. This law of rhythm is dharma. This is the final definition of dharma I am giving you. Dharma is the law of the rhythm of becoming. The way in which each one is becoming, that rhythm is swadharma coming from swabhava. So the deepest truth of our being is this. Discover your real reservoir. You cannot have dharma. You cannot reach satya. You cannot reach brihat. You cannot reach dhrita. You cannot reach certainty. You cannot reach immortality. You cannot reach permanence. You cannot reach these 10 characteristics of dharma unless you start from here. You start from yourself, from your reservoir. Usually this reservoir is not even seen. We do not even know that there is a reservoir. So our first task is to find our reservoir. It's a huge and vast reservoir. As Mother herself has said, the characteristic of becoming a true Aurobindian. And Mother has said, a true Aurobindian has to realize that there is in him a being or a reservoir which is vast and free and quiet and all-knowing. This is the old reservoir. It is in us, already within us. What we are supposed to do in the world is nothing else but to discover it and to allow it to flow. So we are all in the process of becoming. Now this becoming is swabhava. We are constantly becoming that which is the reservoir is flowing. But you cannot truly become in the right way unless you find out the real flow and the rhythm of the flow. Now this idea of rhythm is very important. You will find, take sulfur for example and burn it. It will burn immediately. Take a piece of cotton and burn it. It will burn immediately. But take a piece of pebble and burn it. It will not touch it at all. Similarly, you take a piece of wood. If it is dry wood, it will burn immediately. If it is wet wood, it will not burn immediately. Now, this is called the rhythm. Whether something is fast or slow, and the mode of it, the way in which sulfur will burn will be different from the way in which cotton will burn, will be different from the way in which wood will burn. Each movement has its own mode. This rhythm, this mode is what is called law. The word law you must have heard very often. But basically the meaning of law is very simple. Regularity of the speed, rhythm, and the manner in which it acts is law. Everything falls from top to bottom. It is the law which is called gravitation. Gravitation is a law because it forces everything from top to bottom. That is a law. It's a rhythm. But it's not law everywhere. You go beyond a certain point. You can walk into space. There is no, you won't fall. Gravitation works only up to a certain point, but not beyond it. So laws are not absolutely absolute. It is not as if everywhere it is the same thing. Therefore, I told you the dharma is a limited concept. Never be rigid about it. You have to reach a point where you reach maximum of your dharma. You draw out from your nature the rhythms of your being. Find out whether you are slow or you are fast. Find out. Everybody can find out. In this matter I am slow, in that matter I am very fast. In the things in which you are fast, move fast. In things in which you are slow, don't worry. Even if your other competitors are moving fast, don't worry. You are slow, accept you are slow. Your rhythm is different. Once you have started this kind of movement, you will find your own individuality, your own personality, what you are, you will shine out. You know, Mother has said that each one of us is like an unpolished and unchiseled diamond. Each one of us. You are all diamonds, but unchiseled. If you chisel the diamond, it shines out brightly, isn't it? Similarly, we are like diamonds, but unchiseled. We don't know how to chisel them. The right way of chiseling is to know our swabhava and our swadharma. And if you do it properly, ultimately your shining will come out. When you will shine out, you will find that you will be like the rays of sunlight. Straight. Everything will be straight. That's a mark of your shining out. What I told you was at the beginning, Rita is a shining out of the sunlight from where all the rays are spread out all straight. No crookedness. Now comes the deepest concept of Swadharma. And that is connected with Swabhava. This is the last point I want to tell you. Nothing more. Swadharma is dharma which flows from oneself. What is oneself is one's becoming. You are constantly becoming, growing, isn't it? Everyone is growing. Now, what is growing? What is the source of growing? We are all growing because there is some source in us, which is in us. There is like a reservoir of water, which is there in us. In each one of us, there is this reservoir. Without the reservoir, we would never be able to grow. So remember that each one of us has a reservoir. That reservoir is your real yourself, your true being. Not your outer being. Outer being is not your reservoir. There is an inner being or inmost being, which is your reservoir. Now, that reservoir has a very special way of flow. It flows, but it has its own special way of flowing. Its own rhythm of flowing. You will mark it. Every individual you will see has a reservoir and out of that something is flowing. And if you observe very correctly, you will find that this flow has its own rhythm. To discover the real rhythm of everyone requires your knowledge of the becoming of his self. That is called Swabhava. Swabhava has two words, Swa and Bhava. Bhava is becoming. Swa is self. Self which is becoming, self which is shaping. This shaping has a rhythm and the law of rhythm. This law of rhythm is dharma. This is the final definition of dharma I am giving you. Dharma is the law of the rhythm of becoming. The way in which each one is becoming, that rhythm is swadharma coming from swabhava. So the deepest truth of our being is this. Discover your real reservoir. You cannot have dharma, you cannot reach satya, you cannot reach brihat, you cannot reach drita, you cannot reach certainty, you cannot reach immortality, you cannot reach permanence, you cannot reach these 10 characteristics of dharma unless you start from here. You start from yourself, from your reservoir. Usually this reservoir is not even seen. We do not even know that there is a reservoir. So our first task is to find our reservoir. It's a huge and vast reservoir. As Mother herself has said, a characteristic of becoming a true Aurobindian. And Mother has said, a true Aurobindian has to realize that there is in him a being or a reservoir, which is vast and free and quiet and all-knowing. This is the old reservoir. It is in us, already within us. What we are supposed to do in the world is nothing else but to discover it and to allow it to flow. So we are all in the process of becoming. Now this becoming is swabhava. We are constantly becoming that which is the reservoir is flowing. But you cannot truly become in the right way unless you find out the real flow and the rhythm of the flow. Now this idea of rhythm is very important. You will find, take sulfur for example and burn it. It will burn immediately. Take a piece of cotton and burn it. It will burn immediately. But take a piece of pebble and burn it. It will not touch it at all. Similarly, you take a piece of wood. If it is dry wood, it will burn immediately. If it is wet wood, it will not burn immediately. Now, this is called the rhythm. Whether something is fast or slow, and the mode of it, the way in which sulfur will burn will be different from the way in which cotton will burn, will be different from the way in which wood will burn. Each movement has its own mode. This rhythm, this mode is what is called law. The word law you must have heard very often. But basically the meaning of law is very simple. Regularity of the speed, rhythm, and the manner in which it acts is law. Everything falls from top to bottom. It is the law which is called gravitation. Gravitation is a law because it forces everything from top to bottom. That is a law. It's a rhythm. But it is not law everywhere. You go beyond a certain point. You can walk into space. There is no, you won't fall. Gravitation works only up to a certain point, but not beyond it. So laws are not absolutely absolute. It is not as if everywhere it is the same thing. Therefore I told you the dharma is a limited concept. Never be rigid about it. You have to reach a point where you reach maximum of your dharma. You draw out from your nature the rhythms of your being. Find out whether you are slow or you are fast. Find out. Everybody can find out. In this matter I am slow, in that matter I am very fast. In the things in which you are fast, move fast. In things in which you are slow, don't worry. Even if your other competitors are moving fast, don't worry. You are slow, accept you are slow. Your rhythm is different. Once you have started this kind of movement, you will find your own individuality, your own personality, what you are, you will shine out. You know, Mother has said that each one of us is like an unpolished and unchiseled diamond. Each one of us. You are all diamonds, but unchiseled. If you chisel the diamond, it shines out brightly, isn't it? Similarly, we are like diamonds, but unchiseled. We don't know how to chisel them. The right way of chiseling is to know our swabhava and our swadharma. And if you do it properly, ultimately your shining will come out. When you will shine out, you will find that you will be like the rays of sunlight. Straight. Everything will be straight. That's a mark of your shining out. What I told you was at the beginning, Rita is a shining out of the sunlight from where all the rays are spread out all straight. No crookedness.